This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
U.S. life expectancy falls to its lowest level since 1996. Plus, Chinese air travel takes off as pandemic controls ease. And we'll recap yesterday's visit to Washington by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
There was certainly a tone of celebration almost in what Ukraine has managed to achieve, but definitely an appreciation of the price that Ukraine is paying and the challenges that lie ahead.
It's Thursday, December 22nd. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. An omnibus spending bill has been held up in the U.S. Congress. Lawmakers said the holdup in negotiations centered on Republican efforts to get an amendment vote on Title 42, the pandemic-era health measure allowing migrants to be expelled back to Mexico after crossing the U.S. border illegally. Senate Democrats hope to break the impasse this morning. Lawmakers have just days to go to pass the spending bill as a weekend deadline nears to fund the government and avert a partial government shutdown. U.S. life expectancy fell again last year to its lowest level since 1996, according to new data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That data showed that COVID-19 was the third leading cause of death for a second consecutive year in 2021, while a rising number of drug overdose deaths, which have risen fivefold over the past two decades, also dragged down life expectancy at birth, which now stands at 76.4 years. Turning to Israel now, incoming Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has told the country's president that he has enough support from lawmakers to form a governing coalition, a key step in Israel's parliamentary system that brings Netanyahu closer to a return to power. Wall Street Journal correspondent Dov Lieber has more from Tel Aviv.
After Israel's elections on November 1st, Netanyahu said he would quickly form a government, but it's taken him right up to the end of the deadline in order to do that. And the reason is because he's been locked in very serious negotiations with his allies, who have been able to get a lot of concessions out of him. And the question is whether this means Netanyahu is weak in relation to his allies, which are largely very religious conservative parties, and some of them are also far-right nationalist parties, or whether Netanyahu is, again, using his ability to form coalitions, make his allies happy, so that when he takes the power again, he will be able to advance his policies without too much opposition from them. That is the major question here.
Netanyahu will have 7 days to swear in a government from the date that parliament is informed that he has a government, and given the Hanukkah holiday, that may not be until next Monday. FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried was transferred to U.S. custody on Wednesday to face criminal charges connected to the collapse of the crypto exchange. That's after a judge in the Bahamas, where he was being held, approved Bankman-Fried's extradition. Bankman-Fried was flown to New York and could make an initial appearance in federal district court as soon as today. When he is arraigned, he will be asked to enter a plea. Meanwhile, two associates of Bankman-Fried have pleaded guilty for their roles in fraud that contributed to the cryptocurrency exchange's collapse. Caroline Ellison, the former chief executive of Alameda Research, and Gary Wang, FTX's former chief technology officer, both pleaded guilty to criminal offenses that were similar to those that Bankman-Fried was charged with last week. A lawyer for Wang said in a statement that his client has accepted responsibility for his actions and takes seriously his obligations as a cooperating witness. An attorney for Ellison declined to comment. And on tap for today, the U.S. Labor Department will release weekly unemployment claims figures. That proxy for layoffs declined last week to its lowest level since late September. And the Commerce Department is set to release its latest estimate of U.S. economic output for the third quarter. Before the pandemic, China was enjoying an ever more central place within the global aviation industry. In the years since, however, tight health restrictions have left the country that had been set to overtake the U.S. as the world's largest aviation market before COVID, among the slowest to recover from a collapse in air travel. But thanks to a recent relaxation of COVID-19 restrictions, the Chinese air travel market is stirring once again. But is it ready to soar? Wall Street Journal global aviation reporter Ben Katz is here to help us answer that. Hey, Ben, thanks for being with us.
Thanks very much.
Tell us, what is the state of play here? What kind of Chinese travel activity are you seeing tick back up and what isn't returning?
So really what we've seen over the last couple of weeks is this massive surge in specifically domestic travel. So that is anything internal within China's borders on Chinese airlines. What's not yet returning is international travel. And, you know, that's really linked to the kind of international travel restrictions and the testing and quarantine requirements that are still required by the Chinese government. But with the relaxation of travel restrictions and COVID testing requirements, what it's really led to is this boom in passenger traffic between the different regions in China. And that's really making a huge difference for the local industry there. What we've seen is really a massive spike in the matter of 2 weeks, flights across the whole of China, domestic flights rising by about 158%. I mean, this is a really big number. It's not back to where it was pre-pandemic. There's still a little way to go, but it's a really promising start for a sector that's really been flagging and flailing over the last 6 to 12 months.
And finally, Ben, I'm curious to what extent these developments are being watched abroad. Basically, what are the wider economic implications at play as we watch to see whether and sort of how fast Chinese travel activity returns?
Well, what's interesting about this is that China is such a critical market for the entire global aviation, but also the aerospace industry, right? So Airbus and Boeing sell hundreds and hundreds of planes to Chinese airlines. There's a huge maintenance business that goes with it. The engine makers get profits when their engines fly on Chinese carriers. The subdued element, the subdued nature of travel in China, domestic but also international, has been a big weight on the industry. We've seen kind of the Asia-Pacific region really trail the recovery in profits that we've seen in the US and in Europe. So really, you know, this kind of recovery is really quite pivotal. It's kind of this last puzzle piece to the aviation sector being able to say, hey, guys, we've recovered from one of the worst periods, probably almost definitely the worst period in history for the aviation industry. So I think the entire industry is really watching this, and they're really looking at the developments in the last few weeks as a big positive.
That was Wall Street Journal global aviation reporter Ben Katz. Ben, thank you.
Thanks, Luke.
Coming up, we'll get the reaction from Kyiv a day after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's visit to Washington, D.C. That's after the break.
This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foresight Fund Services, LLC.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky capped a whirlwind visit to Washington yesterday with an address to a joint session of the U.S. Congress, which he used to ask for more aid and pledged that Ukraine will never surrender in its war with Russia. Wall Street Journal correspondent James Marson is leading the journal's Ukraine coverage, and he joins us now from Kyiv to help break down the significance of Zelensky's visit. James, thank you so much for being with us. It's a pleasure, as always, to connect.
Hi there.
What was the overall sort of tone of the visit yesterday and the meeting between Zelensky and President Biden in particular?
Well, look, let's look at this in a kind of long-term perspective. When the war began back in February, there were a lot of people who thought that Zelensky might have to flee the country. But he stayed. The Ukrainian army fought back. And after several months, has managed to take back about half of the territory that Russia seized in those early days and weeks of the war. So, and now he's in a position to make his first trip abroad. So I think the tone was, to a certain extent, there was an element of relief. There was a sense of victory, but there was also a sense of there being a great deal still to do. And President Zelensky, as he's often been able to do during this conflict, was very clear, using sort of personal examples to demonstrate the personal cost and the individual cost of this war, mentioning that imagine being a parent and your kids being killed on the front lines. How are you ever going to forgive the Russians? So there was certainly a tone of celebration almost in what Ukraine has managed to achieve, but definitely an appreciation of the price that Ukraine is paying and the challenges that lie ahead.
James, yesterday on the show, we spoke about how this visit would likely see the U.S. announce that it would be sending a Patriot anti-missile battery to Ukraine, which occurred. Beyond that, what concrete results did this visit yield for President Zelensky?
Well, there was a whole new package of weapons that were announced for Ukraine, weapons and ammunition, that include all sorts of different kits. Some of it new, the Patriots obviously being the biggest announcement. That's critical for Ukraine. Air defense is very, very important here, both against warplanes and against missiles. But there are some other interesting things in there as well. There was something called the Joint Direction Attack Munition System, which will allow the Ukrainian Air Force to more precisely target the bombs that it drops on Russian forces. There were a lot more ammunition for different weapon systems for Ukraine. So there are a lot of things that are important to keep the Ukraine's war effort ticking over, as well as the sort of big-ticket Patriot.
Beyond that, Zelensky was very clear he wants additional military aid too. Tell us what he's asking for, what his appeal was, and if he got a response to that appeal.
Well, he was quite clear in the press conference afterwards that he's always going to be asking for more. There was a moment in the press conference where he said, once we've got the Patriot up and working, we'll give President Biden another call and ask him for more. And Biden said something along the lines of, we're working on it, which I'm sure will raise hopes in Ukraine that there could be more Patriots on the way. There are many, many more things that the Ukrainians want. They want more tanks. They want more armored vehicles. One thing in particular that they want are longer range rockets for those HIMARS rocket systems, and ones that can reach much, much further, which would allow them to really severely disrupt Russian logistics and supply chains. The U.S. has been nervous about giving them. Biden again mentioned that the reasons for that is they want to avoid escalation with Russia, but at the same time they want Ukraine to win. And President Biden was absolutely clear about that, saying repeatedly that they want to make sure that Ukraine can defend itself and has the tools to do that. But on the other hand, the Biden administration is very keen to avoid any escalation with Russia and anything that would bring a direct conflict between NATO and Russia itself.
In terms of this relationship going forward, James, is U.S. support for Ukraine expected to be affected at all by Republicans taking control of the U.S. House next month?
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, I think that was probably part of the reason behind the visit, was to shore that up. There are obviously mixed views in Congress. You know, there's a feeling that perhaps the Republicans maybe want a little more scrutiny of where all this money is going. You know, Zelensky tried to address some of that. He repeatedly said that Ukraine is being very careful how every dollar of U.S. taxpayers' money was being used. And he said many times, "Is this fight is not just for us, it's for you as well." So he was trying to make it clear that Ukraine is fighting for all of the Western world, for democracy itself. And that was the message that he was delivering in Congress. And part of that, of course, was about keeping everybody there on board.
That was Wall Street Journal correspondent James Marson, who is leading the journal's Ukraine coverage and joined us today from Kyiv. James, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And finally, if you've logged on to a streaming service lately and wondered who's actually watching all of these new Christmas movies, well, the answer seems to be many fewer people than are returning to Christmas classics. That is according to new data from Samba TV, which collects information on what people are watching on their smart TVs, and which shows that despite attempts by streamers and studios to crank out new content, most U.S. households still prefer decades-old films. Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Krause has more.
really nothing beats the Christmas classics. Favorites like National Lampoon's Vacation, Elf, Home Alone. Streaming services spend ever more on new holiday film. When we look at this top 10 list by Samba TV, Netflix's Falling for Christmas and Noel Diary were the only two from a streaming service to crack the top 10, which I think sort of speaks to the habits that we've all formed going into the holidays, that for a lot of us when we were growing up, there weren't a ton of options. There weren't 50 new movies every year. And so you kind of build these nostalgic habits that get you used to tuning into and reaching for the same comfort films.
And that's What's News for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.